You'll be dealing with hard vacuum. Do you copy that?
Yes, sir, I said, turning the last corner and slapping down my visor. I was wearing a light vac suit and nothing else. Her timing was impeccable.
Get in there, she said. Move aside every small ship you can. I'm hoping not to do too much damage when the module slams into the hangar.
Right, I said, my heart sinking. All I could think of was how insane her orders were. If the module slammed right into the deck, I'd be killed, and anything it touched would be damaged.
You have 4 minutes, McGill. Run faster.
Plenty of time, sir. Don't worry about a thing.
Chapter 31. The module we'd caught up with was indeed spinning, but it was doing so at a fairly sedate pace. I'd say it made a full revolution about once a minute. My task in the hangar was naturally impossible, but I did it anyway. The element that allowed me to actually accomplish anything was the galactic key. I'd placed that device in my pocket right after gunning down Claver, and I hadn't used it since. This seemed like the perfect opportunity to work a little magic. I ran from ship to ship, entered the hatch after slapping the vessel with the galactic key, and set the vessels onto a scatter pattern autopilot protocol. I'm no pilot, but these pinnaces and tugs weren't designed to be flown by wizards. They were standard-issue small spacecraft, manufactured within Frontier 921 and designed to be operated by any humanoid that wanted to buy one. Most of them accepted voice commands, and with the help of the galactic key, I was able to get my orders across quickly. After setting up two of the small ships and seeing them scoot out into space to save themselves, I headed for a third. But I knew I wasn't going to make it. There just wasn't any time left. The module loomed outside the ship. It was coming closer at a relatively sedate pace, but an object that big could crush a man even if it was moving at a dead crawl. I pulled a U-turn and headed back to the airlock. I almost made it, a testament to my long legs and my uncommonly strong instinct for personal survival. What I didn't figure on was Turov's last-second action. She dropped the containment field and the air escaped into space. I was sucked backward, and in my urgency to fling myself flat, I slammed onto my face onto the deck plate so hard my visor cracked. I barely managed to hang on to the galactic key and secure it, and I was very happy I'd remembered to pressurize my suit before coming in here. The module sailed right over me, blocking out everything for several long seconds. It was like having a house thrown at you. I tried to keep low, but I was still sliding toward open space myself, being sucked out with the atmosphere. Somehow, I escaped being crushed. The module didn't fare as well as I did. First plowing into a pinnace and causing a silent orange bloom of flame, the module came to a stop when it hit the back wall of the hangar, cracking open and spraying out gas everywhere like a cube-shaped tea kettle. "Turov!" I shouted. "The module is inside but ruptured. Activate the field again." She did it, but it was too late for me. I was already past the barrier and twirling out into open space.
"What's your status, McGill?"
"The air release propelled me outside Minotaur," I reported. "Can you effect a rescue?"
"Negative. I'm going down to help the troops. I need some effectives before the invaders reach us."
"Roger that."
"You're on your own, McGill. Sorry about that."
"No problem, sir. I understand."
The connection closed. For several long seconds, I figured I'd bought myself yet another death. I was in a gentle spin, heading toward the huge disk of the planet below. Some men might have opened up their suits right then and there, figuring that would be better than choking to death an hour later on re-entry. But I didn't want to give up. For one thing, I might not get a revive for a long time. Maybe never. If the small complement of troops aboard Minotaur couldn't repel the invaders, all would be lost. The first thing I had to do was get my spin under control. I used my snap rifle, which was still slung across my back. I set the rifle for single-shot mode and popped off rounds in the direction of my spin until I almost had myself steady. Using every trick of my null G training I could remember, I managed to get myself turned around and began popping off shots toward the planet to slow myself down. Fortunately, the kick on a snap rifle was pretty strong. I was able to use the released energy to counter my motion and reverse it. Our biggest worry was that the Skrull would decide to... "Damn it!" I shouted inside my helmet. Minotaur's engines flared blue. They were trying to run, and by doing so, they were leaving me behind. I relaxed, resigning myself to my fate. But silvery flickers of movement nearby caught my attention. Between my position and the surface of the planet, slipping up out of the darkness like ghosts, were the small shuttles and pinnaces of the enemy. They were all utility ships, tugs and the like. None of them were armed, but they were in pursuit, and they were infinitely more nimble than Minotaur. Knowing this was my last and only hope, I turned my snap rifle toward open space and began firing bursts. I propelled myself downward, closing with a line of tiny ships. They loomed large and... crunch! I collided with something. It was like being run over by a whale. I'd been struck and was clinging to what appeared to be a claw arm, unsecured and swinging around in open space. Dazed, I barely had the wits to hang on. My gauntlets closed and I clung to the ship, but I could never have kept my grip if I hadn't been half wrapped around the claw arm's boom. When I could breathe again, I cursed and fumbled, finding safety straps and wires to attach myself. It couldn't be too long before a sickening lurch began and didn't end. The universe spun, and I fought a powerful urge to vomit. When I had that under control, I saw the blinding glare of engines blooming. The tug that I'd hitched a ride upon had spun around and begun to decelerate. That could only mean one thing. I braced myself as best I could, but nothing could completely deaden the next impact. The tug plowed into Minotaur at low speed, but it was enough. The claw arm I was clinging to swung forward under power now, pinching the hull tightly. A half dozen of its brothers did the same all around me. We boarded Minotaur, and I was the first invader to touch the hull. Crawling carefully, I wormed my way over the claw arm and the ship. The nose of the tug had buried itself into a soft spot in the bigger ship's hull. Minotaur was only armored on its prow, around the broadsides. The tug had been rammed into its stern. Inside the ship, I was sure that unfriendly invaders were disgorging onto the decks. This made me angry for some reason. I was getting pretty tired of all these crazy Tau, and now that they'd seen fit to leave their station behind and carry their warlike behavior onto what I considered my turf, well, let's just say that my patience had run out. Instead of crawling onto Minotaur's hull, I scuttled out toward the tug's engines. The tug was no warship. It had no armor, no defenses. I wasn't even sure if the crew could see me with external cameras, or if they would care much if they could. But they ought to have cared. I tapped the rearmost hatch with the galactic key, forcing it to open. Both ends of the airlock now yawned open, breaking every safety code in the book. Gas rushed out, and I was nearly blown back out into open space. I'd been expecting this and managed to hang on. Within 3 short seconds, the ship depressurized. Bodies spun past me and shot out into space as if fired from a hose. They spun and squirmed and died. It was all over quickly. Crawling into the aft airlock, I prodded the bodies I found inside. 2 of them had suits on which were probably stolen from the original crewmen. They were alive but confused. Before they could gather the presence of mind to take a gun off one of their asphyxiated comrades, they died in a hail of snap rifle shots. My magazine finally rattled dry after the second man stopped moving. I dropped it and crawled around until I found one of those lightning rod guns they were so fond of. I checked the gauges on the side. As far as I could tell, it had a full charge. Smiling grimly, I forced my way over 12 stiffening corpses and into the airless passageway beyond the nose of the tug. I was back on Minotaur, armed and ready for more. Chapter 32. Minotaur had never been constructed to repel invaders from small ships. That sort of action was probably unthinkable to the designers of an Imperial warship. The Empire had no peers, after all. There was no external enemy, thus no threat to guard against. Warships were designed to deliver troops, threaten helpless planetary populations, or possibly participate in a major battle as part of a massive armada with another core system rival. This lack of defenses had always puzzled me, but I thought I understood it now. The designers from the core systems never viewed populations, such as those in Frontier 921, as any kind of credible threat. They were worried about one another. Therefore, their ships were built to line up in vast formations, broadsides, all pointing at an equally impressive host of enemy ships from a rival space fleet. From the beginning, as far as I could tell, the alliance between the core systems had been a tenuous one. They'd never possessed anything like brotherly love for one another. They'd cooperated because it made them rich. Why was it all falling apart? I'm not sure any human knew the truth. Maybe a man who lived on the edge and worked with aliens every day, a man like Claver, he might know more than most. It was almost a pity that I'd never get a chance to ask him about it. Almost. My first mission, once aboard Minotaur, was to get to the hangar deck. Monitoring tactical traffic on my tapper, I knew we had operating legionnaires there and they were in a tight battle. I didn't contact them, not wanting to pinpoint myself to the enemy with an active signal. I was alone and could easily be taken out by a roving band of invaders. There was no guarantee I'd get the drop on them a second time. I only fired my newly acquired weapon twice on the way to the hangar deck. The first time was to burn down a Tau sentry in a passageway. I almost felt bad as his head burned away. I could only imagine the effort he'd undertaken to get this far, all the way out into space and breaching the hull of a huge Imperial warship, only to get clocked by me from behind, by one of the rebel side's own weapons. The second time I used it was to blow open the hatch the sentry had been guarding. I deduced that now wasn't the time for subtleties. This ship could be won or lost in the span of the next few minutes, and if I was going to influence that outcome, I had to get back into the game immediately. The hatch went down with a clang, which was significant. If I'd heard nothing, the hangar would have still been depressurized, but it was full of gas and troops. A pitched battle was going on when I stepped into the smoking opening. One group consisted of Germanica legionnaires. They were crawling out of the cracks in their module, which was resting upside down against the back bulkhead of the hangar. Under the module was a crushed pinnace. Two enemy tugs had penetrated the field and disgorged troops. Shimmering with a lavender haze, they were better armed than most of the mobs I had faced. They also outnumbered the human troops by at least 2-1. Outgunned and pinned down by enemy fire, the Germanica troops weren't giving up. They crawled out of their cracked-open module on their bellies, releasing sprays of suppressing fire and seeking cover. They were better trained and disciplined, but many of them were injured when they entered the fight. They'd suffered broken ribs and the like, and they snarled in pain as they wormed their way out of their module. From my position, I had only one advantage that I could identify. I was behind the enemy lines. They were arranged in a half-circle, peppering the emerging legionnaires with fire, and I was at one end of that crescent. All I could see was the backs of the Tau rebels, working their weapons to deadly effect. Some of them were armed, as I was, but most weren't. They had snap rifles and laser carbines, weapons doubtlessly stolen from our own troops. Another man might have hesitated, but it just wasn't in me. There's something about watching humans dying to aliens that flips my switch. I went prone to present the smallest possible target and hosed them with my lightning gun. A dozen or so went down, hit in the back with a withering streak of energy. I had no idea how to use my newfound gun, so I went wild with it. I slashed them with a continuous beam until the survivors turned and saw me. They went mad. Howling, they charged toward me, firing as they came. Projectiles spanged and sparked everywhere as simultaneously my weapon gave out. I'd probably fried it by unleashing such a long, continuous beam. I ran in a crouch and retreated into the passage behind me. About 3 seconds later, they reached the opening and fired a hail of tiny bullets from chattering snap rifles after me. Fortunately, I was around the first bend by that time. Unfortunately, So many bullets chased me that some ricocheted and caught up. Three splinters of metal pierced my light vac suit and stung, punching tiny holes in my flesh. I wasn't sure if they were actual rounds or just shrapnel from the walls themselves, but it hardly mattered. My right leg wasn't in great shape anymore, and blood was running down from my kidneys to my boots. I turned at bay and shook my lightning rod. I ran my eyes over it but didn't see a heat gauge or a power meter, at least not one that I could read. In truth, I didn't know what was wrong with it. "Damn," I said. Realizing I could never outrun them, I scuttled back the way I'd come. I drew my knife and decided to take the first one that rounded the corner in the passage. With luck, extreme luck, I might be able to grab up his weapon and be back in the fight. My plan, vague and desperate as it was, didn't work out at all. I was too slow on my feet. The enemy rounded the corner before I could reach knife range, and there were two of them rather than one. Reflexively, I squeezed the trigger on the lightning gun. To my surprise, it emitted a brief blaze of energy. Apparently, there'd been one last gasp of juice in the thing after all. The two enemies were seared and fell before they could return fire with their snap rifles. I hobbled closer and listened. Silence reigned. Frowning and distrustful, I dropped the lightning gun and picked up a snap rifle. I felt more comfortable with a weapon I knew how to operate. When I finally summoned up the balls to look around the corner, I came face to face with another man armed just as I was. We almost blasted each other. It was close. But after a brief muscle spasm on each side, we eased off our triggers and grinned.
"Germanica?"
I asked the recruit that faced me.
"Yeah, Varys."
"That's right. What's going on back in the hangar?"
"We've cleaned them out. They got hit from behind somehow, and we were able to get out of that wreck and take up good firing positions. We swept them pretty fast. They're rank amateurs."
I nodded, noticing the kid was full of himself. That's how most Germanica people talked. They were all tough as nails and twice as sharp.
"There are more invaders on this ship," I told him. "I need to talk to your commander. We need to find the Imperator."
"The Imperator?" the kid asked, frowning. "You're telling me she's aboard this ship?"
"I revived her myself," I said,
and the other guy's frown told me he wasn't sure if he believed me or not.
"Whatever," he said.
"This way, Varys." I followed him, dragging my leg. He passed back a new skin patch, which I gratefully applied. That stopped the bleeding, at least, and relieved a little of the pain. I met up with the Germanica Centurion in the mess that had been the hangar deck.
"This is unprecedented," she kept saying. "How many did we lose?"
61, sir," a veteran told her. "Most from the initial impact. Half the rest are wounded."
"Are we still out of communication with dispatch? How about headquarters direct?"
"Nothing, sir."
"Unacceptable," said the Centurion.
She was at least in the thick of it. She helped drag wounded back into the module where they set up a medical triage unit, even as she complained about how unbelievable her predicament was. For my own part, I was relieved to see her face. I didn't know her. There was no way she could rat me out to the Imperator or anyone else for having colluded with Claver.
"Sir?"
I asked. The Centurion eyed me like dead meat.
"Varys, what do you want here?"
"I'm the one who engineered your retrieval, sir."
"Really?"
she asked, turning around and putting her hands on her hips. She was a tall one with narrow hips and even narrower eyes. She was older than most Centurions were in Varys, but that didn't mean she was a softy. I got the feeling she'd seen her share of combat rather than playing it safe.
"I'm Centurion Lisa," she said.
She had one of those foreign accents that sounded faintly British.
"By Hegemony's rules of conduct, I'm declaring you a battlefield asset, and I'm commandeering you as an asset. Do you have a problem with that, specialist?"
"No, sir," I said. "Not as long as my officers aren't around."
"Excellent. Name?"
"Specialist James McGill, sir."
"McGill. Where have I heard that name before?"
I shrugged. "Not sure. Maybe the Imperator mentioned me?"
My reference to the Imperator created the instant effect I'd hoped for. She forgot all about asking me to tell my story.
"You've seen the Imperator? She's alive?"
"Yes, sir.
and still in command of this ship as far as I know. I last saw her on the fire control deck. Lisa frowned.
Why hasn't she contacted me yet? There's nothing on my tapper, nothing on local tactical chat either.
My heart sank. Turov had never stayed quiet for long. If she was silent, she was most likely dead. For some strange reason, I didn't like that idea. I suggest we go check on her, sir, I said. Lisa looked around and spied the recruit standing next to me.
Take Chisholm here. Report back to me when you have news of her status.
Roger that. We left in a hurry. I was still limping, but it wasn't as bad now as it had been. I took a few seconds to raid the medical kits of the two surviving Germanica Bio people who gave me what I needed to keep moving. We passed up two firefights, but got caught up in a third one as we approached the tactical control room. This was because the combat was going on right outside the door of the facility itself. A freakish-looking combat suit stalked the hallways. It was so big I thought it was a drone at first, but then I saw real eyes inside that slitted visor. Servos whined as the suit turned at the waist and claw-like grippers pinched closed, grabbing a towel by the waist. The alien struggled and shot his weapon bravely into the monster's face, but the rounds only splattered, turning into orange sparks on the heavy titanium armor. The pinches closed, snapping the towel in half. Hanging together by a thread of spine, the alien slipped down in a messy heap onto the floor when the pinches opened again. Around the metal suit's splayed feet were the crumpled forms of several other Tau, all similarly dispatched. The monster turned, sighting us next. It took a clanking step forward. The recruit I'd come with lost his nerve. He backed away, lifting his weapon and cursing repetitively. I knocked the barrel of his weapon down. "Identify yourself, please," I shouted at the suit. It took two more clanking steps toward us. The recruit at my side shrank with every stride. Finally, the head popped off, and a grinning young lady beamed down at us in amusement. It was none other than Galina Turov.
"Nice to see you again, McGill," she said. "I found this thing in the weaponry closet. Pretty neat, isn't it? I think all our legions should buy them. Tech World is a great market for hardware like this."
"Sir," I said. "Centurion Lisa of Germanica sent me to find you. May I ask why you haven't been communicating with the rest of the ship's defenders?"
"Couldn't," she said. "It's hard to hear in this thing. The motors whine and roar. Besides, I couldn't reach my tapper with my arm inside the actuator."
"I see. What are your orders, sir?" She grinned.
"Let's kill all the Tau, then plan our next move."
"Yes, sir." The next half hour troubled me somewhat. I began to understand Turov's personality, the darker side. She liked to fight as long as the enemy couldn't touch her. I thought maybe a lightning gun could take her out, suit or no. But despite following along in her stomping wake as we mopped up enemy resistance across the ship, we didn't run into any more lightning guns to test my theory. Chapter 33. Hours later, after the ship had been cleared of invaders, I returned to the fire control center. There was Galina Turov standing with her right hip canted at a provocative angle while she worked the boards. I felt a surge of relief that the battle was over and that she had survived it. How odd. I began to ponder why the hell I cared whether this woman had survived or not. Staring for a full minute, I thought it over. She was standing with her back to me, unaware of my scrutiny. As far as I was concerned, Turov had been a devil from the first day I'd met her. I should want to see her dead. The thought of finding Turov's corpse, young and lovely or older and snarling, should have brought a smile to my face. After all, hadn't she sent goons to harass me in my own house, men who'd actually killed me in the end? But as my gaze lingered on her form, I found I didn't want her to die. The only answer I had for my mood was it must have been a natural response to her youth and beauty. Men like me, we're suckers for a pretty woman. We're just wired to want to give them a break, I felt sympathy for every cop who'd ever let a girl slide. But then I sternly reminded myself she wasn't just guilty of dodging speeding tickets. This woman had been a conniving, cast-iron witch.
"Are you going to report or stare, specialist?"
Turov asked me suddenly without turning around. I jumped and stepped fully into the room. There were cameras on me. There had to be. Damn. "Sorry, sir," I said, deciding to cover by completely ignoring the situation. "Yes, I'm here to report, and to check up on your status." Why the hell had I said that? She turned around slowly, her head cocked to one side, questioningly. I found the gesture eerie and entrancing at the same time. She was like some kind of vicious, animated doll. I knew an evil spirit was hidden in that package. I could only imagine her charm had helped propel her up the ranks early on, and that as she got older, ruthless ambition had finished the job. She had pinned her golden suns on her lapels by this time. 2 suns, the rank insignia of an imperator. I knew I should feel overawed and stand at attention, but I couldn't muster that sort of reaction. I was tired, and she looked all wrong in the role of high-level brass. She looked more like she'd just graduated high school. Revivals like this one could be very confusing. Her eyes studied me thoughtfully.
"I understand," she said after a moment, sighing. "And I forgive you."
She turned back to her console, and I stepped forward cautiously. I understood that I'd been forgiven, but for what exactly, I wasn't sure. It could have been for my lack of respect or simply being caught staring at her butt. Then again, it could have been something else entirely. As a man who often needed forgiveness, I certainly wasn't going to blow it this time. "Thank you, sir," I said in a neutral voice.
"You still haven't given me your report?"
Relieved, I did as she asked. I avoided looking at her by staring out into open space as I spoke. I found it was easier to convince myself I was talking to an imperator if I didn't actually have to look at her. I told her the ship was clear of invaders, but as far as we could tell, Gelt Station was entirely in enemy hands. At least, it wasn't sinking into the atmosphere, not yet anyway. Number-wise, aboard Minotaur, we were nearly up to a full-strength unit due to Centurion Thompson's relentless efforts.
"Pitiful,"
she said when I'd finished. I didn't argue, she was right. 2 Earth legions had been essentially wiped out, and we were down to a handful of troops struggling to survive aboard Minotaur. We were cockroaches, hard to stamp out, but for the most part, harmless.
"I screwed up, you know,"
she said suddenly. I glanced at her, which was a mistake. She looked sad. Was her lower lip trembling? I couldn't believe it. This woman was normally made of steel. I could tell she had a better grip on her mind than she'd had when she'd first been revived, but she still wasn't in the clear. "A bad death, that's all it was," I said, echoing the words of my commanders since I'd joined Varys. "We all have them, and we all have to learn to shake them off." She sucked in a breath through clenched teeth. I thought she might cry or something, so I tried to stare down at the planet below. There was plenty to see. The impact of Minotaur's broadsides hadn't fully dissipated yet. There were storms and dust clouds spreading over a quarter of the planet. I could only imagine the number of deaths that had been caused by that single salvo Claver had launched.
"Normally," she said in a stronger voice, "your advice would be sound, but this occasion is very unusual. Have you looked at me, specialist?"
My eyes widened. For me, that wasn't a safe question when I was around Turov. Never had been. Rather than replying, I bided my time. Sure enough, she started talking again, and the awkward moment slipped away.
I'm a kid," she said. "I was a fool."
A small fist hammered on the console. "Oh, that. Yeah, you're looking a little on the young side, sir."
"It will ruin me,"
she said bitterly.
Don't you see? Normally when a legionnaire dies, it's a shock. But you can get over that shock. People treat you the same way as they did in your previous incarnation. But how can that happen now? How am I to command, to climb higher, if I look like I should have a curfew every night?
I shrugged. Look on the bright side, Imperator. You got your youth back. Doesn't everyone want to go back in time at some point?
Yes, of course. That's why I didn't update. I got notices, you know. If you last long enough, more than 5 years or so, the bio people start to send you requests to update your body records. In some cases, they can compel you to do so. But not me. I had too much rank. I slipped by them and ignored their wisdom.
Why'd you do it, if you don't mind my asking, sir?
Selfish reasons? Fantasies? Who doesn't want to freeze their body at that perfect moment in their lives? I was vain. I wanted my youth back someday. I fantasized about it now and then.
I was kind of surprised she was confiding in me about all this, but not too surprised. I'd found that people were often their most honest and philosophical after a solid death experience. Turov's had been extreme. I figured she was correct, too. It would take years to regain the respect she'd once commanded. Those hegemony pukes back on Earth could be vicious. They probably already disliked her. Hell, I couldn't blame them for that. But worse, hegemony people rarely died. They weren't like front-line legionnaires. At least people in Varus had some understanding and sympathy for the side effects of revivals. None of that would translate well back on Earth, where tribunes and imperators had bellies that pushed against their desks and receding hairlines to match.
You're getting it now, aren't you?
She said, reading my expression. Yes, sir, I do see your problem. But it's just a setback, that's all. She shook her head.
Combined with this disaster?
She asked, waving a hand toward the portal where the planet's atmosphere still roiled.
I'll be lucky if I'm a centurion a year from now.
I wondered if she could be right, but I didn't say anything.
I can't believe it, McGill,
she said.
You're actually a good listener. Of all the hidden traits I might have suspected you of having, that must be one of the last.
Thanks.
I'm not trying to insult you,
she said, putting out a hand to touch my arm. It was a natural gesture, but her touch felt like a shock to me. I wasn't used to being gently touched by an officer, and especially not by one that resembled a cheerleader. She withdrew her hand, but I could feel her touch there afterward as if it was burning my skin. What's the plan, sir? I asked, trying to change the subject.
We'll build up. We'll wait. The rebels have very little armament. The station is stable. So I think we have some time.
I frowned. Time for what?
To revive our legions and retake the station. What else?
I blinked, but managed to nod. I'd been thinking more along the lines of flying home to Earth where we could revive all our people in a day. I almost suggested it, but held my tongue. I could tell she wasn't in any mood for suggestions from enlisted types today. The more I thought about it, the more I understood her line of reasoning. She couldn't go back to Earth, not now. At this point, she was a monumental loser, a close equivalent to the original Tribune Varus of Rome himself. He'd managed to lose the province of Germany and 3 legions all at once, barely beating Turov's new record. In fact, maybe Earth would christen their next legion of misfits, Turov. That thought brought a smile to my face. Unfortunately, the Imperator noticed it quickly.
What's funny?
She asked me. Nothing, really. I was just thinking of the commissary.
The what?
She asked, frowning. I was proud of my quick dodge. I'd been thinking of the commissary, but only at a very low level. The best misdirection contains an element of truth. After all, I was a little hungry. Claver didn't eject all the modules, I explained. That means there's a commissary full of food and drink nearby. It also means there's almost no one aboard to share it with.
Drink,
she said, as if the thought had never occurred to her before. She opened a channel to Centurion Lisa. She ordered that a watch be posted here at the fire control center, then she turned back to me. There was an odd look in her eyes.
Come with me, specialist.
What could I do? It was a direct order from a high-ranking officer. I followed her down the passages until we came to the commissary in question. It was, in fact, the officer's pub that we stopped in. She took a seat and slapped the bar.
I need something strong, she said. What does a weaponeer drink when he wants to get drunk immediately?
I grimaced. Sir, I'm not sure that's a good... She slammed her small hand down on the bar again.
Shut up, McGill. You talk all the time. I want you to play bartender.
Shrugging, I dug into the cabinets. Wow, I'm impressed, I said a moment later. These Dramatica friggers do like the good stuff. I poured her a glassful of 18-year-old single malt scotch and left it on the bar between us. She looked at the brown liquid dubiously.
Can you at least give me an ice cube?
She asked. Sure. I gave her three, and after she let them melt a bit, she took a swig. The results were comical, but she managed not to spit it out on the floor.
My taste buds, she said. They're operating fully again now that I'm young. This stuff tastes like gasoline.
Over 600 hegemony credits a bottle, I said, pouring myself a glass and clinking it to hers. That's expensive gas. Galena laughed and drank her drink. She drank too fast, and I let her. When a soldier has just finished a hard battle, they want to drink at that moment like no other point in their lifetime. I found some chips and peanuts under the bar that weren't too stale. We ate them, but it was already too late to slow down the booze. We were getting drunk. Galena, I said, staring at her with glassy eyes.
What?
She asked, laughing.
Why did you send goons to my place back on Earth?
She rolled her eyes and looked a little embarrassed.
Oh, that. Can we talk about something else?
Sure. Soon as you tell me the truth. I figured this was going to be my one and only chance to get some honesty out of this woman. She was pretty loaded and her defenses were down. She shook her head.
I did it because you posted that note, telling people to vote against joining hegemony.
Yeah, I get that, I said.
Was that the whole story? You sent them just for petty revenge?
No, she said. Not at all. I'm not that kind of person. I wanted to discredit you.
I chewed that one over fuzzily. I tried eating more peanuts, but I was still baffled.
I don't understand. Arresting me was supposed to make people distrust my word?
She gave me a smile that was almost shy.
I know you, James, she said. I knew what you would do. You performed perfectly.
Frowning, I thought that one over. You knew I'd kill those men?
The odds were good you'd resist arrest. That makes you look guilty.
I see, I said, irritated. It didn't work. The vote went my way. Galena nodded.
Yes, you won that one.
Her admission made it easier to forgive her. That and the booze. We shared two more shots, and soon we were both laughing about it. What happened next was predictable, but unplanned. At least, it wasn't planned by me. I wasn't so sure about Turov. She was a woman who got what she wanted any way she could. We ended up emptying the bottle and making love on top of a pool table. The balls had been all sucked down into the table, stowed for flight, so they didn't get in the way. The whole time we were doing it, I was thinking to myself something along the lines of, "This is crazy. You're crazy, McGill." But it didn't matter. We did it anyway, and we were just lucky no one came in and caught us. Afterward, I found myself stretched out on my back with her draped over me and snoring. I could feel her small, tight breasts against my belly. I wondered if anyone was going to notice a large sweat stain on their pool table in the morning. The thought made me chuckle, causing Imperator Turov's cheek to bounce on my ribs. Not wanting to disturb her, I lightly wound my fingers in her hair. It felt silky and nice. I had the time to contemplate who'd taken advantage of whom. There were a number of mitigating factors to consider. First off, she was an officer while I was enlisted. Technically, that meant she was in the wrong. There were countless extenuating circumstances, however. I was a big guy who was physically older than she was. I'd plied her with strong drink, which her young body had no resistance against. That was wrong, even if she'd ordered me to do it. I decided in the end there was plenty of guilt to go around between the both of us. In my honest opinion, I figured even a council of nerbs would have declared the situation to be a tie.
Chapter 34.
When I woke up, Galena was gone. Instead, my eyes focused upon a very pissed-off-looking centurion, Lisa. Her face loomed into mine. I thought before that she was too tall and had narrow eyes like a ferret, and her newfound rage hadn't improved things. She was as sour and sneering as an officer could get.
"Get off that table, specialist," she roared.
I rolled off with a groan. An empty bottle went over the edge with me, making a splintery crash.
"Varys trash," she shouted.
She made my legion's name sound like an expletive.
"This is just what you're famous for. Disorderly, slovenly behavior. Drunkenness."
I didn't really listen to the rest, but the list was a long one. I got to my feet. Behind the centurion were several of her grinning non-coms. They were obviously enjoying the situation. "Sorry, sir," I said. "Tough battle. I'll be going back to my unit now."
"Unit?"
she scoffed.
"What unit? You're alone on this ship, Varys. Except for that crazy bio and a few of her sidekicks. She revived my unit to full strength first."
I nodded, unsurprised. It was standard operating procedure after heavy losses to revive entire units together instead of spreading the service around. What good would it do to have a dozen solo centurions standing around? Better to have a cohesive force that knew one another and had trained together. "Can I be dismissed, sir?" I asked, tugging and patting my uniform into place until it started to grab and latch onto my shoulders. Smart clothing generally attempted to cover a person up, but if you pushed it away repeatedly, it was intelligent enough to give up and stop trying. Later, you had to coax it into covering your body fully again. That's what I was attempting to do now.
"No,"
she said, putting one hip up on the corner of the pool table and swinging her leg like a cat lashing its tail.
"I want you to tell me how a man like you, an obvious moron, managed to take out a shipload of invaders almost single-handedly."
I smiled a fraction. "There was nothing almost about it, sir. I fried them all."
"How?"
"They're not too bright, these rioters. They're untrained, and their brains are only operating on half power anyway, if you ask me. All I did was flank them and unload." She nodded and heaved a sigh.
"This is Germanica's officer's mess. You know that, right?"
"Yes, sir."
"Why would you put me in this position? I owe you a great deal. Without your aid, both our legions might have been permed. Immediately after your heroic effort, you have to go and do something like this. Something that would get any of my men flogged. How am I supposed to handle this situation?"
I knew she was telling the truth about the flogging. Just as they'd done so long ago back in Roman times, our legions still flogged men for things like breaking into the officer's liquor. If a soldier was beaten so badly a coat of sprayed-on skin wouldn't fix him, well, hell, they could always run him through the revival machine again to freshen him up. "You could let me off with a warning this time, sir," I suggested, hopefully. Lisa shook her head, and her troops chuckled. She tossed them an annoyed glance over her shoulder, and they quieted immediately.
"I will,"
she said.
if you tell me why you broke in here in the first place.
We stared at one another for a full second after that. My head swam with words I couldn't afford to let out of my mouth. I could have told her the truth, that a very youthful version of our Imperator had ordered me down here, fed me booze until we were both out of control, and then proceeded to strip me down on the pool table. But somehow I knew that wasn't the way to go. For a full second, I didn't know what the hell to say, but fortunately God has gifted me with a quick wit and a quick tongue. At least when I'm faced with the kind of dilemma where I need to come up with a good story or be flogged. After the battle, I really needed a drink, Centurion, I said. As far as I knew, this was the only place on the ship I could get one. Lisa heaved another sigh and nodded.
At least you've been honest. Everyone was wiped out aboard this ship, is that right? Everyone except for you and the Imperator. Then you began reviving bio people.
I nodded warily. Could this woman know the truth about Turov and me? Was she having a little fun right now? Was all this being recorded and posted on the Germanica Legion laugh boards even as we spoke?
Dismissed, Specialist, Lisa said suddenly. But don't pull this crap again. I won't stand for more petty crimes, not even from you.
I was halfway to the door by the time she finished her sentence. Won't happen again, Centurion, I said over my shoulder. And thank you, sir. One of her veterans who'd been looming behind her this whole time flipped me off on the way out. I touched my hand to my brow and gave him a very informal salute in return. There never had been any love lost between our two legions. Not knowing where else to go and not wanting to meet up with Galena again right now, I headed to the bio module. Blue Deck was even busier and steamier than it had been the night before. The first thing I saw was a muzzle in my face when I entered. Germanica had posted guards. I thought it was a wise move. State your business, began the guard, but he broke off. Oh, it's you, Varys. What do you want? The trooper lowered his gun. I was surprised he'd recognized me. I guess I'd made quite an impression by coming to their rescue while they were pinned down in that module.
Where's Centurion Thompson? I asked.
He pointed with the butt of his snap rifle. I followed the gesture and saw the bio was indeed nearby, sprawled out in a chair. Her hair was matted with blood, sweat, and that unidentifiable goo that drips from the lower regions of revival machines. She worked all night and passed out. They finished getting Lisa's unit together and started on yours. Your people are operating the machine now. I walked past the man and peered into the revival chamber. There was Anne Grant working the machine with two orderlies. I smiled, but she didn't even look back at me. Reviving Centurion Thompson had been a good move, I thought to myself. She wasn't Germanica, so after she'd finished a full unit of their troops, she started on one of ours. Which unit? Why, mine, of course. Why not? They already had an active weaponeer who knew the score. That was a good start. The revival machine might have made the same choice if they'd left it up to the AI. Anne? I asked, coming up behind her. She glanced at me and smiled thinly. She looked tired but determined. I sympathized with her plight. Bio people got the worst of it after the battle was over, and generally their little slice of hell lasted longer than the battle itself.
McGill, can you give me a hand?
I stepped in, even though my stomach was jumping from too much alcohol and too little food. I knew she needed help, and by now I'd helped to revive enough fresh troops to qualify as an orderly myself. A few minutes later, I had a chance to check the roster on the machine's console. Sargon is up next?
Yes. All the bio people in the unit are already back in the game. We're working on frontline people next, then the officers and auxiliaries.
Can I make a request? She immediately frowned. For some reason, the bio specialists were very finicky about their technology. They didn't want us to know anything about it, and they certainly didn't want their decisions second-guessed by an amateur. Anne heaved a deep breath.
What?
Bring Natasha out next? Her face darkened, and I realized immediately I'd made a grave error.
No, no, no,
I said, throwing my hands up in a cautioning gesture. I think our unit needs her. She was working on a system to turn off these rioters. Still frowning, she crossed her arms. She made a small gesture indicating I should continue speaking. I explained the holographic clothing, the tampered boxes, and the rest of it. "So," I finished, "that's what Claver was up to."
"You're blaming everything on him? All of this? You're claiming that he went so far as to blast the crap out of this planet to stop the spread of the infected holo machines?"
"Pretty much, yeah. He was in the midst of a dozen scams trying to get rich. When Turov ordered Legion Varus to replace Germanica, his timetables were screwed up. He had to rush everything to go home. His schemes came apart. Unfortunately, he just about took the planet down with him." Anne stared at me distrustfully.
"That's a longer story than usual," she said.
"Oh, come on, I didn't make all this up."
"Who can back up your story?"
"Natasha can, that's who." Sighing, she tapped at the revival unit's control screen until Natasha's name came up. She selected it and engaged the unit.
"I hope you're happy,"
she said. "I'm miserable." "Hey, you've got enough people working in here. How about you and I get some breakfast?"
"No,"
she said in a quiet voice, not looking at me. Behind her, the two orderlies exchanged glances. They gave each other a nod. I frowned at them, then returned my attention to Anne. I had to wonder why everyone in the unit acted like I was always up to something with the ladies. Sure, I'd had more than my fair share of entanglements, but lots of people did. I guess my rep had come because my affairs tended to be a little more high profile than the norm. "Come on," I said to Anne. "When's the last time you ate?"
"I haven't yet. Not since she brought me back,"
she said, jabbing a thumb at the lanky, sprawled figure of Centurion Thompson. "If she wakes up and complains about you leaving your post, just blame me," I suggested. "She'll believe any story that points a finger in my direction." Chuckling, Anne finally gave in and accompanied me out the door. Behind us, I noticed one of the orderlies slapping money into the other one's hand. I'd won someone a bet. We walked together to the wardroom. Fortunately, Centurion Lisa had moved on, and we avoided the closed pub in any case. We were after food, not booze. We ate ravenously, barely talking, until we'd stuffed ourselves with real eggs, toast, hash browns, and coffee. "Wow," I said, leaning back and sighing in satisfaction. "That's almost enough to turn me into a smuggler like these Germanica snots." Anne frowned at me.
"They aren't all like that. Like Claver, I mean."
"No, I could tell you a story or two, but I won't. Let's just say they like to live well while on deployment. We get remanufactured pork and beans while they eat and drink the real stuff."
"It is good," she admitted.
She shifted uncomfortably in her chair and didn't look at me for a moment. I could tell she wanted to say something, so I stayed quiet and sipped my coffee. When she got done staring at her plate, she finally spoke.
"James, could I ask you something real for once?"
"Sure."
"Do you ever get serious? About women, I mean."
Sure I do. Especially when they're about to kill me." Anne nodded as if confirming a suspicion. She got up and took her tray to the recycler. "Did I say something wrong?" I called after her. She gave me a tired smile.
"No, not at all. Thanks for the company. I'm going back to check on Blue Deck, then hit a bunk, if you don't mind."
We parted ways, and I drank another cup of coffee before heading out. I found a bunk for myself and stretched out on it. This was easy to do, as the ship and most of the unit modules were as empty as tombs. Despite the caffeine in my blood, I could hardly hold my eyes open. My head found a musty pillow, and I was snoring like a baby 2 minutes later. Someone woke me up hours later. This time it was Natasha. Unlike the other women aboard, she actually seemed happy to see me.
"James," she said, "I heard what you did. I can't believe it. You've given us all a second chance."
"Yeah?
Are you still asleep?"
In truth, my mind was fuzzy. Last night's booze hadn't completely exited my bloodstream, and neither had thoughts of Galina Turov. By the stars, I swear that woman knew things most girls her physical age hadn't dreamed of yet. I had to remind myself that for all I knew, she was actually 70 years old. It was a strange thought.
"Are you listening to me?"
Natasha demanded suddenly.
"What? Yeah, sure I am. Keep talking."
She gave me a quizzical look, then let it go.
"You've given us a chance to recover. It's a thin one, but we've got to take it before they arrive."
Natasha had my full attention after I'd absorbed that sentence. I didn't ask who they were. There was only one they that mattered.
"When do they get here?"
"Technically, they're already in system, but they're cruising toward us slowly. I think they're watching us, and they must want to see how we're going to react to the situation."
She was talking about the Nerbs. She had to be. Physically, the Nerbs were green bags of protoplasm that resembled seals, but they acted more like entrenched government accountants.
"Did they bring planet busters this time?"
I asked bitterly. More than a year back, I'd watched them erase a civilization. Sure, the alien squids living in the Zeta Herculis system had been vicious bastards, but what species deserved annihilation for the crime of wanting independence from the Empire? To my mind, they'd been in the right, but no one wanted to hear my opinion.
"I hope not," she said. "Their ship is certainly big enough for bombs. It's a stellar cruiser with an unusual configuration."
"Why come here if not to dispense justice upon a helpless population?" I demanded. She was thoughtful.
"What they love most is holding a trial and declaring guilt or innocence. If they find wrongdoing here..." "You're right. They'll eradicate someone eventually."
The more I thought about it, the more irritated I became. The Nerbs didn't have to get involved in this. Local affairs were not their problem. That said, I was certain there were plenty of galactic trade goods and aliens on the station, which elevated this to the level of an interstellar crisis. Probably one of the aliens had reported the situation and brought it to the Nerbs' attention.
"They gave us the job of local enforcement,"
I complained, struggling with my boots.
"They should stay out of Frontier 921 and let us handle it. We'll do what has to be done."
Natasha shook her head and patted my shoulder. I was standing now, stretching and yawning.
"We can't control that, James," she said. "What we can do is affect the situation at hand."
"How?"
"Gelt Station is sinking, James," she said, "and Turov is thinking we should let it go all the way down."
I frowned.
"But there are millions of people on that station. Most of them aren't involved with the rebels.
Turov has made the call. I went back down to Blue Deck when I heard that Graves was coming out of the oven. Those bio people hear a lot of things, you know. Turov talked to Graves about 1 minute after he was off the table. He listened and agreed. What a cold fish that man is."
She gave a little shudder, and I splashed water in my face at a stainless steel sink. Damn, I needed a shower.
"You're saying Graves seconded the motion?" I asked.
"To let all the Tau civvies die?"
"Not just that. He came off the table so calmly, so matter-of-fact. He was like a man who's awakened after dozing off on the family sofa while watching vids. He swung his legs off the table, took Turov's words in, and concurred with her judgment. Then he thanked the bio people and left. It was like there wasn't any fear in him. No questions about who he was. Nothing."
I looked at her and saw she was a little haunted. All bio people looked that way, but techs like Natasha only did when they got close to the reality of the process. I didn't have time to worry about that kind of thing, however. There were bigger issues at stake.
"Come with me," I said. "We've got to talk some sense into people."
"Who, Graves?"
"Yeah, him first."
"Then Turov,"
she said.
"That's what you're thinking, isn't it?"
I glanced at her. She had an odd look on her face. What did that mean? I pushed the thought from my mind. I wasn't good at reading women, and this wasn't the time to learn how to do it.
"Right," I said. "We've got to lay out a plan, tell them about it, and convince them it can be done."
"What plan?"
"I'll tell you on the way up there."
I explained, and Natasha became alarmed. She argued with me all the way up. She finished her objections outside Graves' quarters, still whispering reasons why it couldn't work. But in the end, she went along with my plan. That's why I liked her.